This is Beth Smith. I'm going to let John Bayouk talk to you on the tape this afternoon. We're at 139 Chilcot, which is his address, and this is the 21st of February. Now we're going to go back in time a little bit and see what John can remember about living in Salida.
I was born March 3rd, 1934 in Salida. The delivery doctor was Dr. Parker. My parents were John and Mamie Bayouk. I had one sister, Elizabeth, better known as Bubbles Bayouk, since married her married name is Thompson now. My mother was a stay-at-home mother. My father developed two fluorspar mines in the county. He employed about 75 to 100 people. After working the mines for about 15 years, he sold one of the mines to General Chemical. That was in Browns Canyon. And he sold the other one to Reynolds Aluminum, which is up at Poncha Springs, where basically the hot water's at. Later, he retired from Reynolds Aluminum. And both of my parents, as of this interview, are deceased. Some of the memories that through my teen years were many. Of course, like all youngsters, riding my bike all over town, playing rubber guns, playing lots of sand lawn sports. The most challenging was sneaking into the theater, or else one of us would pay and the other one would open the back door and let everybody in. Money was kind of tight. A lot of the time I spent on my uncle's ranch, my mother's brother up in Nathrop, and did a lot of fishing. And one of the things that I really liked to do was go to the high school and watch the big boys practice football, and thinking, someday I'm going to do that. And that was a big memory that, and the most memorable, I think, that I had. The schooling I had was grades 1 through 6 through was Longfellow. 7 through 8 was Kessner Junior High School. And 9 through 12 was Salida High School. I graduated in 1953. I entered the University of Colorado on a football scholarship after graduation. And I graduated from the University of Colorado with a Bachelor of Science degree in 1957. Talk a little bit about my athletics experience. Of course, back then, there was no Pee Wee League football. There was really no organized football for children unless they were in junior high or high school. After I started high school, I worked and I went out for athletics. I delivered groceries for Stancato Grocery, which now is an antique shop. I saved my money. By the way, I also was shining shoes. And now we're in about the 40s. And the war was going on. And Salida was a destination for all the soldiers from Camp Hale, the 10th Mountain Division up by Leadville. They used to come into Salida and get the shoe shined and then drop off their boots. And they had to be spit shined so they could pass inspection. Well, some of them come in pretty ratty, and we had a hard time shining them up, but we got the job done. I saved my money. They were very good tippers because some of the guys that were coming into town, it was their last hurrah on their way to Italy or Germany for the Winter War. And so they threw money around like it was nothing. There was times that I would make more money shining shoes than most of the men working in Salida. It was nothing to take home $50-$60 for a week and more. I used to save my money in a coffee jar. It was a 1 pound Folgers jar. And I just came home with all my money and I threw it in the jar. I never counted it. I never did anything with it. And I just kept getting jar after jar after jar. Of course, when I turned 16 years old, I was in high school now, and I needed a car. So I went down to Alfin Motors, which is now High Country Bank downtown. That used to be a Ford dealership and Costello's Bar and Grill. I walked in there. There was a 46 Ford in there. And I walked in there and I talked to Mr. Wilkins' son, I think, and wanted to buy the car. And I asked him what he wanted, and he said, "Well," he said, "I want $675." So I said, "Well, I don't know if I have that much money, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you 12 jars, 1 pound jars of money. You can count it out, have your secretary count it out, or whatever." Anyway, I was $70 short in buying that car. And I told him, I said, "Well, I guess I can't buy the car because that's all the money I got." And he was a big Kansas fan from the University of Kansas. He said, "Well," he said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll sell you the car for the amount of money that you have in the jars if you would consider going to the University of Kansas when you graduate from high school." I said, "Well, that would be not too hard to to promise you that I would do that." And so that's how I got my car. There were only two cars in high school, mine and my cousin's. And everybody else, all the other people or students or children, had to borrow their folks' cars, but we had our own. So when we would have parties and we would go someplace, well, we were the bus. So we would go pick everybody up and take them to the party. I've got to stress this because there was no drinking, no smoking, and everybody act like gentlemen and ladies in all of the parties that we went to. It was a time that athletics meant more to me than drinking and smoking. Everybody wanted to, "I can hardly wait till I get to be 21 years old. Well, my father always told me, he said, "If you drink or if you want to get drunk, you can get drunk at home." Well, knowing that, it wasn't any fun anymore because I didn't have to sneak around. And I can honestly say that I probably, I don't think I drank anything until I graduated. But while I was in high school, we played football with other schools like Pueblo Central, Pueblo Centennial, Colorado Springs, Alamosa, Canyon City. Canyon City had not beat Salida for 50-some years, and we weren't about to relinquish that record. So while I was in high school, I was high school All-American. I was leading ground gainer in the state. I had 50 offers to go to different schools on scholarship. One of them was Kansas, and I had to keep my promise to Mr. Wilkins. I talked to those people, but I decided on going to the University of Colorado. And the reason I did that, I'd like to have went to UCLA or to Louisiana State. Those were the ones I preferred, but my mother and my father never missed a football game that I played in. I was in junior high school. So I felt like I better stay close to home. Tony Delmonico was the coach, my coach, and Gov Gruner, and Rudy Agansky. And Tony Delmonico was a graduate of CU. They ran the single wing up there at CU. We ran the single wing in high school. So I fit right into the mold there. I kept my promise to Mr. Wilkinson. I talked to him. I very politely told him I think I'm going to stay close to home. While at the University of Colorado, I started as a freshman there. I was just a little guy, 6 foot and 225 pounds, and probably the lineman never weighed that much. But while I was in high school, I forgot to mention, everybody played. There were no girl sports, no soccer, no baseball, no wrestling. So everybody played football, basketball, and track, of which I was part of. I'm going to back up a little bit. Well, in the high school, our senior year, we went all the way to the state finals and got beat by Lakewood by 2 points. We took, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 10 track guys to the state track meet with Coach Moline, and 10 guys we brought back the state championship. When we got off, we had to go in cars. We didn't have a bus, so we had to go in cars. And everybody was laughing at us because here are these little guys from Salida coming with just 10 people, you know, and here these guys are in them fancy suits. All we had was white shirts or white shorts and a t-shirt. We didn't even have purple and white. But everybody on that track team either took first or second, mostly first, and that's how we came away with the state championship. And that was against all the big Denver schools, all over. So that was quite an event. Go back now. I had to put that in there because I think that was significant as far as the athletics in Salida. The other thing that I want to make mention, when Salida would play Canyon City, there would be a special train come to Salida and take all the people that wanted to go to the football game, and I'll guarantee it was most of the town. So if anybody wanted to rob anybody, that was the best chance because there was nobody in town. I think even the police went. It was quite a rivalry. like I said, they never beat us. I'm almost sure 50, maybe 50, 50 plus years. So it was quite a rival. People in Salida really backed the schools. The athletics, anything that you want to do with athletics, everybody, you could go around, get a donation, do whatever. And it was quite a time. I think I'll go ahead and say a little more about football at the University of Colorado. When I got up there, first of all, I'll tell you a little story. And it's a true story, but I was going with a girl from Salida by the name of Patricia. Everybody called her Sue Moore, and she was going to go to Western State. Well, there was a guy here that asked me one day if I would like to go fishing with him, and I said, well, that would be good. And he said, well, we're going to go over to Gunnison. And I said, well, that's even better, because you had to know some people to fish on the Gunnison River. Well, we got in the car and went over, and we went past Western State. He said, by the way, he said, how would you like to, how would you like to play football or go watch them practice football? And I said, well, that'd be all right. And so we pulled off over there, and we sat there for a few minutes. He said, well, how would you like to practice? And I said, well, you know, that might be really fun, you know. So lo and behold, I went in the locker room, and they had my hat and my helmet size, jersey size, everything fit me to a T. So I put that on there, and I went out there and started practicing with those guys. Well, they made me look like a hero. I was returning punts, and they made me look like a hero because I would be running, and some of them would fall, and, you know, it just made me look like an All-American. Well, the guy's name was Steve Frazee, long-time resident of Salida, very well-liked, and I love him to death, even though he left me at Western State. I had no way to get home. So, of course, I was enjoying myself. There's a lot of guys over there I played against. Bill Rhodes and Jerry Church and Darren Bradford, all those guys were from Lahana, and we played them. And so it was kind of fun over there playing with them. Well, the word got out, and I don't know how it got out, that I was over at Western State. And to be honest with you, I really didn't try to go home. I was having a good time, even though I didn't have a lot of clothes either, just washed them in the night. But the word got out, and Ray Jenkins from the University of Colorado come to Salida and asked my mother where I was, because I was supposed to be at CU. And he said, well, he's at Western State, and he can't, you know. Transportation was just not what it is today, you know. They didn't have the cars to go over Monarch. And so my mother didn't go over and pick me up. Ray came over there, and I'll never forget, he walked in where we were staying and grabbed me by the neck. He said, you're going, we're going to sit to home and going to see you. There was a big guy, a tackle from Durango, and I knew him because we played against him. His name was Armstead. And he stood over there by the door, and he was big, you know, big, big guy. Maybe 265, 6'7", big. And he said, over my dead body. And Ray Jenkins said, son, I hope you have your insurance paid up because we're going out that door. Well, Ray Jenkins was the wrestling coach at CU. So Armstead just kind of moved over. We walked out, and Ray Jenkins, who was the end coach at CU, said, let's stop by your house, get your clothes, and I'll follow you all the way to Boulder in your car. By that time, I had my dad and mother had bought me a brand new 53 Ford when I graduated. So I really thought I was uptown. Got to CU, and it was about, maybe a week. And I stayed with Ray and B. Jenkins at their house. Ray wouldn't let me go anywhere. Well, there was a scandal about CU coming to Western State and stealing me away from there. The presidents of the university got into a arguing match. It was a scene. It was a real scene. Well, anyway, I landed up at CU and played 4 years there. I made the team as a freshman and played with some real athletes. And while I was there, I won't go into a lot of games, but we used to beat the Dickens out of Nebraska, and I scored all the touchdowns in one game, and I still have the football signed by all the players and everything. We got to go to the Orange Bowl in January 1, 1957, to play in the Orange Bowl. I was leading ground gainer in the nation at CU. I was leading scorer in the nation there. And when we went to the Orange Bowl, we played the University of Clemson. I'll make mention of this because I see a real change, but there were only two colored athletes on our team. John Wooten and Frank Clark. Frank Clark played with the Cleveland Browns. John Wooten played with the Cleveland Browns after they got out. We got down to Miami, and they would not let those two athletes eat at the where the I'm going to just say white guys were. So all the guys on the football team said, well, look, if you don't honor them, you don't honor us. And so we wouldn't go in there till they let Frank and John go in there. And one of the funny things is we went to a show down there, and Harry Belafonte, who was the entertainer, they still wouldn't let John and in there, Frank. So we said, okay, fine, we're not going in there either. It got to the point, Clemson never had a colored guy on the team, and they would not play football against us. So we said, well, fine, then forfeit the game. We don't have to play. We'll just come down here and have a good time. Well, finally, they had a big hoop to do about it, and finally they said, okay, we'll play with Frank and John on that on the team. Well, needless to say, without getting into a lot of the game, we just kicked the stuffings out of them the first half and got a little overconfident. And the coach for Clemson told those guys, if you don't play football, I'll resign right after this football game. And so they came back roaring like a bunch of tigers. Well, anyway, it got to be a close game. I scored the winning touchdown, and we beat them, I think it was 27-21, yeah. And after that, I went to Dick Stapp, who was our guard, went to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. We had our choice. We could either go to Hawaii for the trip to Hawaii or go to the Senior Bowl and make $500. Well, $500 then was like $1 million now. It was just hard to, you know, nobody had any money. We had a lot of money, but no money. I guess I'll put it that way. And so we went down there and played in the Senior Bowl. I was number one pick for the Green Bay Packers. And while I was at the Senior Bowl, I was talking to the Canadian scouts. The Canadian people were paying a lot of money for the people from the lower U.S. come up there and play. Well, I didn't sign any contracts. I didn't do anything. And when I got back home, we used to have to take our oldest son, Steve, and I'll get back about my marriage, but we had to take him for a ride all the time to put him to sleep. And Marsh Wells, who was a scout for the Cleveland Browns, came down and told me, you know, you haven't been drafted. And I said, what are you talking about? I haven't been drafted. You saw all the letters. I'm number one pick for the Green Bay Packers. They said, no, they picked Paul Hornung because they said you had signed a Canadian contract. If you had signed a Canadian contract at that time, they lost their draft choice. So anyway, I went to the Cleveland Browns. I got drafted by the Cleveland Browns. I played 5 exhibition games there, got hurt, was released. When you played back then, there were no such thing as no cut contracts. $1 million deals where you can't trade, you can't do this. We were pretty much like cannon fodder. I was making $9,500. Jimmy Brown, who was the number one pick for the Cleveland Browns, was making $16,000, and they gave him a new car as a signing bonus. So that kind of tells you that what kind of organizations that we had back then. After I healed, I came back to Salina and went up to Canada and played for the British Columbia Lions in Vancouver. Played a season up there. Wife didn't like it. me being away all the time. Now we've had a child. I'm going to go back now and tell you when I was a junior in college, I married Patricia Moore, and in 1955, that was my junior year in college. And in that time, at my senior year, we had our first child, Steve, and Sue got to go to the Orange Bowl, but Steve was still in the oven. And so it was quite a year at CU. Sue worked as a court reporter. I wasn't making any money. I think I got $15 a month, and this is a true statement. Nobody on that team got any money except the $15, and that was for laundry money. And for that, I had to rake the sawdust pit when the high jumpers jumped. So we didn't get that free. But our apartment cost $50 a month, and that was utilities, furniture, everything. So, and I think Sue was making, maybe $200, $250 a month. So we were really living high on the hog.
Tell me, John, what position were you playing on the team?
I was a fullback, and just a little guy. I still went, when I went to the University of Colorado, I was still 6 foot and 225 pounds, and that's where I ran. After all the athletics and everything was done at CU, then I was honored by being Sports Illustrated All-American. That is one tough thing to get, because it comes from the coaches, not the writers of the paper or anybody else. There's a bunch of coaches and then the people from Sports Illustrated. So that was quite an honor to get that one. Let's see. The sports, I must mention this. Everything comes to my mind. I sometimes get confused, Beth. But I am, without being boisterous, I am the only All-American to come out of Salida in the 21st century. Hopefully there'll be more. And there were some good football players back then in the 30s and the 40s. You can go in the gymnasium right now and see all those banners up there where they won the state championship. But some of them guys could play football when they were 23 and 24 years old. But there were guys like Stan Provenza, little bitty guy. To this day, he's a little bitty guy, you know, and meaner than a tiger. We had Tuffy Chambers, who went to Northwest University. Just a number of guys that I could go on, I guess, for an hour just talking about those guys, but I'm sure that we'll run out of tape. So that kind of summed up my athletic life from Salida to the big time and then back. After I come back from Canada, I went to work for the Martin Company, and there was a guy from Salida by the name of DeLeo, who was the personnel man for Martin Marietta, and he hired all the guys from Salida. Anybody that wanted a job could get a job at the Martin Company. So I went to work at the Martin Company as a project supervisor, and worked there for, I'm going to say, maybe 10, 11 years. And in that time, when I was there, I was coaching Little League football. And, of course, we had the other little boy, our other little boy, Jimmy. And so I coached them in baseball and football, and they become good athletes. I will mention that Steve... kind of followed in my footsteps. He went to Calgary, Canada, after he played football at TCU. See, I'm getting ahead of myself. We moved to Texas in 1966. I left the Martin Company. Now I'll go back. Steve played football for Trinity High School. And if you know football in Texas, there was probably 175, 180 kids out for football. And they actually have a cut where if you can't perform, you don't play. You're just... But well, Steve played quarterback for Trinity. He had a number of offers to go anywhere in the Southwest Conference that he wanted to go to, and he chose TCU because he felt like they were in the cellar losing all the time and he could help them out. Well, then Jimmy also played at Trinity as linebacker, and he also went to TCU, both of them on full football scholarships. Never cost me a dime except what they spent, and that was a bunch. But Jimmy was a freshman All-American, and he was 2 years behind Steve, so they both got to play on the same team. Steve went to Calgary, Canada, and drafted in from Calgary, and played professional football up there, came back, wasn't his cup of tea. He liked, so he tried out with the New Orleans Saints, they had to cut him because they said they just didn't have time to train another quarterback. So then Steve went to work at General Dynamics. Jimmy was still playing. He was drafted by the Seattle Seahawks. And Jimmy said, I have enough. I don't want no more football. And he got both of them graduated from TCU. Steve in communications and Jimmy in law enforcement. Steve now is coaching in the junior high school where he went to school. Jimmy is the chief of police in Sulphur Springs, Texas. My wife of 49 years now, we moved back to Salida in 1986. We went to Texas in 66 and came back in 1986, and we decided that this is where we wanted to be. And when I came up here, I retired from down there. I worked as vice president of purchasing, project manager for Bell Helicopter, so I thought, well, if I can work as hard for them as I am, I can work that hard for me. So I bought a little shopping center and had a carpet store and ran that from about 1989, I think, until we... I'm sorry, 69. And then we came back up here in 86. Sold the carpet business, sold the little shopping center, and I come up here to Salida to retire. While I was down in Texas, I had three or four businesses going, of which I won't mention. We probably gonna run out of tape or record, but I had a brick factory down there, and I built a number of houses. I was a general contractor. I didn't pound any nails. But we sold all of the businesses, and I decided I was going to come up here to retire, and which I did in 86, in 1986. Played around up here for the better part of 6 months, riding a motorcycle all over the mountains, and I was riding that trail from the top of Poncha Pass to Monarch. And I thought to myself, you know, if you fall off of this, got hurt, broke your leg or something, the bears are going to eat me. So I said, that's enough motorcycle. Frank Butala, who is my cousin, has a contracting business here, told me that Mr. Hyman Greenberg wanted to sell the furniture store. And I told him, I said, look, I don't want to work. I come up here to retire. He said, no, you better go down there and talk to him. He said, because I think you could get a good deal. The Hyman family, or the Greenberg family, had that furniture store for over 90 years. They used to sell stoves, hides, and then just Hyman and there's the other brother. I'll think of it in a minute, but they had the furniture store. Well, Don McQueen, who bought, I went and talked to Hyman Greenberg and about buying the place, and he said, you know, John, he said, I just sold it to Don McQueen. And Don McQueen owned the Coca-Cola bottling company here for a long time. Well, I said, okay. So I needed some furniture because I'd left a lot of our furniture with our oldest son, who moved into one of the houses that I built. And so we needed furniture. Well, I went down there and talked to Don McQueen and bought the furniture. And he said, how would you like to go to work? I said, oh, I don't know. And he said, come on. He said, I need some help. I just bought this place. So I said, okay, I'll work for you 2 days a week. And I picked the 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday. And he said, that's okay. That'd be great. Well, what turned out to be 2 days turned out to be 6 days a week. So I ran that store for quite a while with Don and Marilyn. And then Don and Marilyn got tired of it, so they sold out to the present owner, Mr. McNabb. And he vacated the building and took the Coke building that Don had out on the highway. And I bought into the building that was Greenberg's. And the funniest thing, there were either one or no furniture stores in Buena Vista and Leadville. So we would do all that business. Vail and those things just never existed. So they would come down here. Well, they would come in there. Some of the Leadville people would come in there. And funniest thing, they didn't believe in banks. And they would come down there, and they would have a tray of money, you know, just perfect in there. And if you wanted 500, they could deal out 500. If you wanted 1,000, they could do that. And I'm sure some of them did. But the people that we dealt with mainly in cash. But a lot of people would come down there and ask where Hyman was. Mr. Greenberg, and he hadn't been there for a long time. So we told him, well, we don't, Hyman is not here, but we give better deals than Hyman. So we kept their business.
Tell me, where was the furniture store?
On where it is right now, on, what's the address? I don't know. It's right next to the theater.
Yeah.
A couple stores up from the theater. And, you know, when I was a kid, the Sheikhs lived upstairs. There were apartments up there. And there's still apartments up there. Beautiful apartment. And so I was quite familiar with the building. And so I bought into the building. Steve came up. Steve was working for General Dynamics. And the one day, they laid off 5,000 people at General Dynamics in Fort Worth. So, not having a job, he calls up and he says, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, good. I was getting tired anyway. So I said, come on up here and run the furniture store. So he came up 1990 or 91, and he ran the furniture store, and I went fishing. And then when he'd say, well, come back and help me, I said, nah, I don't want to do that. So I did that. I said a little bit about my wife. I went with her, Patricia Moore, sued everybody. I went with her from junior high school, so you could say the 7th and 8th grade, the 9th to the 12th, 4 years of college, and I've been married 49 years as of this recording. So we've had a wonderful relationship. We've had a wonderful marriage. two wonderful children, three great grandchildren, and one great granddaughter. So that fills you in a little bit about that. Sue's dad was an engineer on the railroad. Worked down there for from the time he was 16 years old till the time he died. Just wonderful people. Never had a problem with my in-laws. Let's see, Bev. What else do I want to tell you? Some of my accomplishments, I guess. Since I've been in Salida, I ran for the city council. I didn't like what was happening and with the city, so I ran for the city council in 1987. And I served 15 consecutive years on the city council. And then the state of Colorado voted in term limits, so I had to retire or get out because of term limits. During that time of 15 years, I'm pretty proud of my voting record. A lot of decisions, good, bad, big, little, and hopefully I voted the way that I thought was best for the city of Salida. I had no agendas. I didn't have anything. I wanted to get rid of any people or anything, or change anything. Whatever was best for the city of Salida is the way I voted. And then some of the things that I guess that I most probably big decisions were with the hot water line from the source at Poncha Springs to Salida. I was part of that.
To the swimming pool?
To the swimming pool. We're having a problem with it now as of this date. And it's because I think we had some bad engineering on this job. But I think they're in litigation, and I can't say much more about that. One of the other achievements that I saw that I thought needed to be addressed was there was nothing to do for the middle school kids. There was nothing that where they could vent their anger or frustrations, their energy or whatever. So I started the dances at the middle school. I got with the principal of the school, told him what we had in mind, and we'd have the dances. We probably at any one time had probably 250, 300 kids there, and they had to pay to get in. We used some of the money, we put it in a school account, and we bought the band t-shirts and whatever they needed to do. And that went on for probably 2 years, maybe three. I was instrumental in doing the recreation program. It wasn't much, and I kept hitting the desk and pounding it and saying we need a recreation program. And finally, we had the right council, we had the right mesh with the council, and we put the recreation program in there. We had a recreation director who was doing a marvelous job right to this date. And then at the swimming pool, we had that 54 feet of snow here in Salida, and it broke some of the ceiling joists, and the insurance company paid for most of the damages at the pool. And I think we're in litigation with them too.
Well, that snow right happened about 2001, didn't it?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, about 2001. And they don't want to pay for all the damages. Well, the city of Salida went ahead. We done as much as we could, and we put a new instead of tile on the swimming pool, we put a new system in there of fiberglass and things that it just made a better deal. The tennis courts were redone. I take pride making sure that we had another baseball field, and we call it the Pee Wee League field. As of this day, I was blessed for doing the 15 years and being an advocate of this baseball field, and one of the fields right now has Bayou Field on it. And hopefully that'll stay.
Right. What about Christmas Mountain? Did you have anything
to
add?
Yeah, let me get a couple other things here. I was part, probably, these are important things, Beth, that I was part of the, not negotiation, but the Vandeveer land and water deal, where the city bought that land and water from Vandeveer. That guaranteed the city of Salida that there is no way that Salida will ever run out of water. I don't care if it gets 25, 40,000 people. We will have ample water. And we did a big project at the sewer plant, because we, through negotiations and things that happened back when Salida built the sewer plant and Poncha built the sewer line, Salida would process the sewage for Poncha. Well, we had our choice. We could either expand the plant or put in what they call a centrifuge. And this centrifuge takes the water out of the sewer. And if you know anything about the sewer, about 95-96% of sewage is water and not solids. So we got that. So now we're in good shape with the sewer plant. The sewer plant makes money. The water fund loses money. So now the city has gone and said, okay, we'll take some of the sewer profit and we'll apply it to the water. And so we don't have to charge people so much for water. So that was a big project. The trail projects... I was on that. I still serve on the airport board for the city of Salida, and I still go to the Upper Arkansas Water Conservative district meeting and kind of sit there and fill the administrator if there's any problem or anything that has to go with the city. You asked about Christmas Mountain. Christmas Mountain. I can't remember the guy that was here, but he worked for the cable company when it cable come into Salida. And he said, you know, it'd be nice to put something up there on the mountain. And I guess everybody said, yeah, it would be nice. And so what they did is they painted a bunch of 4x8 sheets of plywood and laid them up there kind of like a decoration. And when you look at that 4x8 sheet of plywood against a 700-foot mountain, you couldn't even hardly see the plywood. Well, there was a guy here by the name of Darrell Bailey. He was the administrator, and I was on the council then. And I told him, I said, I'm going to light that mountain. And he said, oh, you can't do that. And I said, yes, I can. No, you can't. So I got me a committee. Some of the people are still on the committee. Bonnie Bonrant, she's still on it. Some of the other guys... we've just kind of let other people take it over. But so I got with Chris Schirmeyer, who owns Master Electric, and I said, well, if we go up there and put floodlights in, we could flood the mountain with lights. Well, we did that. And I had the privilege of the countdown. There are probably, I'm going to say, 2,500, 3,000 people downtown wanting to see this mountain light. Well, I did the countdown. Sue was standing by my side, and we counted down, flipped the switch, and there was nothing. Just some lights on a pole. She says, "Are you going to turn the rest of them on?" I said, "I think that's all there is, Sue." Well, anyway, Mr. Bailey said, "I told you, you can't get it done." And being hard-headed, I said, "Yes, I will get it done." And so I got with Patty Montlaro, who is at the University of Colorado, and I asked her if she would get in touch with the engineering department and tell me about lights and tell me about all this, which she did. I got with Bob Bigelow, and Bob Bigelow stayed down there on the parking lot of the Pueblo Bank and Trust, and I was up there on the mountain with this, I think they call it a sphere or something, and we shot the points of what looked like a Christmas tree. We drove a stake in there and later came back and drove steel stakes in there. Knowing now what kind of lights we could do, Master Electric went up there and put more power up there. And so we had that outline. Well, that was kind of nice. And we found out through the engineering department at CU that you could not use anything but probably white and red orange lights. Blue you couldn't see, or green, because they're too far away and they just didn't do. Well, I put together, I asked for people to help. We had the Christmas tree outline. So I asked for help, and there were some people that were retired in this town. Of course, Bigelow was the surveyor. Bob Dalmay, retired from that place where they make the, outside of Boulder, where they made those triggers for the bombs and stuff. I don't know what it keeps in. I've lost.
Rocky Flats.
Rocky Flats. Thank you. Thank you. That's what you get when you're getting old. See, I'm too old. So I got Bob Dalmay. We got Mr. and Mrs. Stevensons. They moved here and retired. They live up there right up on Chavano. And then there was a man by the name of Mr. Bemant. And all of those people went up there and looked at it. And being an engineer, I think Dalmay and Stevenson, they said, "Well, you know what, this is going to be a real job." That mountain is 750 feet tall. And you cannot put something flat on the ground. If you lay something flat, you will not see it. So everything up there, all of the wire for the outline of the tree is done in red, of course, and couldn't do the green. And it had to be put up on steel stakes. Keep it off the ground. All the ornaments up there are laying about, I'm going to say, close to a 90 degree angle. And Bob Dalmay, Bement, and Stevenson, and I'm sure there were others that I'm forgetting, but they're the ones that did all the ornaments that you see up there. And I got the last laugh because Darryl Bailey wasn't here. They let him go. He wasn't doing a good job.
About when were you working on all this Christmas mountain?
When? We would start. Oh, probably. You mean a year or?
Yeah.
I think that. What is that? About 5 years since that's been up there. Five or six. I can't. I've got all the notes on that. And but it's been a long time. There were pilots that I talked to that saw that thing when they're flying at 50,000-60,000 feet or wherever they're at. They said that's the scariest thing I've ever seen. You know, because they could see it, but they couldn't see the mountain. I mean, this thing just stood there. You know, the first time they saw it, one of the guys was Skip Hilligas. I think he saw it. He said, "Lord," he said, "I couldn't believe what I was seeing." He said, "I had to rub my eyes." He said, "Here's this Christmas tree, and it's just sitting there." So anyway, we got a big laugh out of that. The public service did put the power up there. Chris Schirmeyer did all the electric. Gee, I'm going to probably leave some people out, and I'm going to feel real bad about it. But that's about all on the Christmas tree, Beth, unless you have something else. Changes in Salida. I guess I don't know how to say this, because I don't want to offend anybody, but the people that are moving here in here want the same thing that they left behind, and they don't want to pay any more taxes. I mean, they come in here and they've got some of the screwballs idea that you ever seen there or heard, and my thing to them was, well, you know, why did you move here? Why? You know, well, we didn't like where we were at. Well, now why do you want to put it here? You know, we kind of like it here. You know, so, I'm not saying everybody is that way. You know, there's some good people. More traffic on Highway 50. I can remember as a child, Alphen Motor had a bulk plant out there. My dad at the mines had a credit thing there, and I can remember buying gas for 12 and 15 cents a gallon, and I would burn $65 worth a month, which is running in my car. But they was there where the windmill is right now. That used to be a bulk oil plant. The root beer stand is where Morningstar is now, where they have their office. The swimming pool was up there. The Warners had the gravestones, and they're up there now where Cellular One, I think it's up there. I think it's Cellular One. Jenny's hamburger stand was probably where everybody gathered, all the kids, after the ball games and everything. It was up there, kind of where Food Town was. There just weren't a lot of building up there. I'm sure there's others that I'm leaving out. There was no Walmarts and no Murdochs, and the Ford dealership was there, and that was Danny Granzella's. No, it wasn't there, because that Ford dealership was downtown with Wilkins, and then I can't remember who bought it. But anyway, there are three new schools built. Longfellow. There used to be Longfellow and McRae, Kessner Junior High School and High School. Now, of course, we got three, a brand new field house. I sure like to play there, because we played what they call Andrew's Field House, or Andrew's Gym, and it's like a cracker box compared to what they've got now. But, of course, time moves on. More athletics in the school system. There were no athletics for girls. Like I said earlier, there was just three things. You could play basketball, track, or football, and that was it. They had a number of softball teams in the area, and that was just something. People would come out and line the whole field. And now the field, it's totally different, but the field went from north and south, and they had a big grandstand. It was full of people. They didn't have the three fields that are there now. There was just one. And people would line that field all the way to the river, all the way around, all the people in there, and we played some softball.
Were these the town teams?
Town teams. Uh-huh. We had the DNRG, was the railroad team, Staple and Chevrolet, which I played for, and we were the good guys. then they had VFW, they had, Coca-Cola, But anyway, teams would come from all over to play. And we had a pitcher. I played for Stapleton Chevrolet. Stapleton Chevrolet put out more money for that softball team than you could imagine. I mean, we went all over. We went to the Nationals. We went to Wyoming. We went to Grand Junction. We went all over. All expenses paid. Never cost us a dime. We had suits just like the New York Yankees. We played like the New York Yankees. We used to have to practice 2 hours a day. We had a pitcher. His name was Maxi Ambrosik. And Maxi was unstoppable. The king in his court came here, and that was where this guy was a pitcher and a catcher and a first baseman. And that was the team. So they wanted to play us. You know, it was just an exhibition to have fun. So we thought, well, that'd be pretty neat. Maxi Ambrosik said, I'll tell you what we'll do. I want a pitcher, a catcher, and a first baseman. Yeah, we played them and beat the socks off of them. And this is a team that traveled all over the United States. They were that good. They all had beards and, you know, just like old-time baseball players. But I was the catcher for the team. Stapleton, Harold Stapleton, and Vivian said, okay, guy that hit the most home runs gets a trip to the World Series. I said, ooh, that'd be neat. So I hit the most home runs, but I could not take the trip because that would have put me out of the amateur league, and I wouldn't have been able to play basketball or football. So I gave it to, I think, Leonard Williams, and he went. But that was fun. We went all the way. We lost 1-0 in 13 innings, and softball's only 7 innings. We lost 13 innings, 1-0 to the Florida Bombers. So that was exciting.
You know, I heard something about a John Bayouk Day here in Salida.
Yeah, that was a day. By the way, I just happened to have that little article.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, it's in... it was February the 14th, 1957, and it says, friends pay tribute to Johnny Bayouk. And this was after the Orange Bowl. This was after everything. And there was probably 150, 200 people there. And Dr. Bud was a Toastmaster. And I mentioned this, that Dr. Bud and his wife, Frank Vitala and his wife, went to every game that I played out of town when I was at CU. They had tickets, season tickets of what Irene, Mrs. Bud, still has those tickets. And but they went all over. I even babysat it when we played Arizona. And I babysat a Dr. Bud's little boy. Well, they went out on the town. But a lot of people there. Father Reverend Fred Vanderburg, he was gave the invocation. Fred Leach was head chef of the banquet. Of course, Del Ward was here, Del Ward being the coach at CU. My parents, Sue's parents, and... then they just had, mentioned a few. Of course, I mentioned my mother and dad. Victoria Bonoski was my sixth grade teacher in grade school. Bill Andries, Charles Moline, Gov Gruner, John Held, Harold Stapleton, Harry Cable, Eleanor Fry, Kenneth Benfold from Boulder, Del Ward, and had a... had a nice dinner. They gave me a lot of money. And I could take money then. Because that's when I had signed with the Cleveland Browns. Mr. Cole, who was my dad's partner in these mines, he was there. Sammy DeLeo, he was one of the big guys. Florrie Shoes. You know, and when you look at Salida, you know, when I was growing up, they had what they called the Greeks, and that's where the dentist office is now. I don't know who's in there right now. Right above where the Gem Factory guy bought that next building there. Who was in there? Who's?
Okay.
That was
Dr. Seitz.
Okay. That used to be the Greeks. And there were two brothers there, and they would make candy. Like, they would put Russell Stover's to shame. And that's not exaggerating. That place on the weekend was just packed with people. You know, one of the things I guess that I miss is when I was shining shoes, if you come to Salida Town, which the farmers or the ranchers and the farmers, miners and everybody else come to town, you dressed up. You had your shoes shined. It was just a different atmosphere. We had three clothing stores in town. You had Murdoch, you had the men's shop, you had Dufton's, you know, and people patronized those places. Didn't have any Walmarts or Gibsons or anything like that, but a lot of those old businesses like that, Moto Day, where the ladies could go in there and buy all kind of dresses and cruise bags and... I just can't think of all of them. Well, up the street was another place like the Greeks, but that's where most of the kids hung out up there. And like I said, we just, to be honest with you, Beth, we never get, not one person, not one got in trouble. Never. I was probably the worst. I'm not proud of this, but it happened. Of course, I had the only car in town, and I was going up East Street. I was mad at Sue then, while I was still going with her in high school, and right there on the corner where Harry Cable lived, I went around that corner about 40 miles an hour, I guess, and he was standing in the front yard.
And Harry Cable was the police?
Chief of police. And Cork Mitchell, Frank Mitchell, was one of the policemen, and so I hurried and I saw what happened. I hurried and I parked the car downtown, and so Frank Mitchell, my brother-in-law now, come up to me and says, "You know, Harry Cable's looking for you." And so he gave me a ticket. Well, I had a left foot, and I think I had six or seven speeding tickets in 1 month. But
now, this was when you were in high school.
High school. But these are memories. I would go before the judge, and the judge was the mining inspector. And he would inspect the mines for my dad. And his wife would make these beautiful wreaths out of cedar bough with the cedar berries and all that. So he would say, "Well, you bring the cedar berries, and I'll overlook the tickets." The kids right now could never get away with that. Never. But like I said, we did, you know, got a lot of spankings. Kids right now couldn't do that. They're under so much pressure. There was no peer pressure when we were in high school. Nothing. As I mentioned before, people had money, but people didn't have money. You know, most of the people, well, my dad... I think he was working for $1.25 an hour. You know, I would make that much shining shoes in 20 minutes. You know, and it was just a good time. Like I said, nobody, you could leave your house open, wide open. Everybody left their key in the mailbox. You know, didn't have any crime. We had one incident where a guy escaped from the prison in Canyon. Bundy. I think the name was, maybe that ain't his name. But anyway, he pulled into the Y&R garage, and the Y&R garage was right there where the t-shirt place is right now. That area right there. And he pulled in there, and I think he filled his car full of gas. can't think of the guy's name that owned that. I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, he shot the guy in the face, and he got away, but they caught him, young, Mr. Young. And but that's the only thing I can remember, that and a lot of fights at what they called the Del Rio. That's where all the soldiers would go. Leadville was off limits to the soldiers of the 10th Mountain Division, so they would come to Salida, and there would be more fights down there than you could shake a stick at. It was like a boxing arena, and that was the Del Rio, and that is now Four Seasons Campground. But that used to be a big dance hall. We used to go down there and just, you know, sit out there in a car because we couldn't go in. Well, I could go in because John Davis, Jackie Davis, John's son, sometime we would sell hamburgers. But we weren't allowed in there where the liquor was. We had to be in a separate little area. But we would, a lot of times we'd go down there and just watch and see how many, who was going to fight and who wasn't. But it just, it was just a more relaxed atmosphere. Most of the women didn't work. They were housewives. I can remember going to the Poor Farm, which is now the bed and breakfast up there on County Road 120, 140, I don't know. Anyway, it used to be the poor house for the county, and all the ladies would bring a covered dish, and they would, Ernie Kimberlin was, and Chris Trujillo, mostly Ernie Kimberlin and his band would play. Come midnight, they shut her down. There was no whiskey that you could buy. Most of the men had a bottle in the car, so, but nobody got drunk. I know this because I spent a lot of nights up there. My folks would not leave me with a babysitter. Didn't have babysitters or whatever. And so I would stay in the car until they got done dancing. But come midnight, they shut her down. Everybody would go in there and eat. Have a good time. Get in the cars. Come home. There was just a lot of things happening. There was dances in Villa Groves, dances in Sawatch, dances in Leadville. And, you know, just a lot of things. Leadville, what a place. You know, when I was growing up, they used to be the enemy. You know, in basketball, they never played football. So we played in the 6th Street Gym. And if you've ever been in there, probably, I'd say it's not 30 feet wide. You know, it's just people all over you. You know, instead of a basketball game, we'd see how many people we could knock out, put them down those stairs where we were dressing. But anyway, they used to have boom days, which they still have. They would get a lot of the miners, all the mines were going up there. And they would have drilling contests. My dad and I won one drilling contest one year. Some of the holes, when you go into Leadville, you see them big rocks, they got those holes in there. I don't know if our names are still on them or not, but we did that. Leadville had three base softball teams. Matter of fact, one of the guys that played, O'Leary, I think he's the superintendent of schools up there now. Just going to Golden Burrow and, you know, and eat chicken fried steaks after the game. And old Harold Stapleton, boy, he just, as long as we won, we could get anything we wanted. I don't know. That's, like I said, I know when I came back, it was not the place that I left. You know, as a kid, there's just a lot of things happened, you know, and it should happen, you know, and it should happen. Good things should happen. And I think the people now really want good things to happen. Getting businesses, you read the paper where a lot of them now are doing this economical development thing. You know, this went on a long time ago. We even hired a guy to go do that for, I think it was $40,000 or $50,000, and he couldn't get nothing. We're kind of in a bind here because there's no transportation. except UPS, now DLC or whatever the other one is. If it's not big, they can handle it. But to get something like the carpet business, when I was in the furniture store, I could ship carpet from Dalton, Georgia for 75 cents a yard. My door. Okay? If I would go to Denver, if it had to go to Denver, it would cost me a dollar and a quarter a yard to ship it from Denver to Salida. So they just don't have the transportation here. Hopefully, right now, we're working on getting some instrument landing equipment at the airport. If we get that, that's going to be a big help. UPS said they would come in here as another field that they could land at. And I'm sure FedEx will do the same thing. So we've got things like that going. I admire the people that worked on the river project. Brings a lot of tourists in here. I don't know how much money they spend, but I guess it's a goodly amount. But that's good. If we could get some jobs in here, and back in the old days, when I was in high school and before, we turned down, or we, the people that the fathers then could have had Western State College here, we could have had a sewing machine factory here, and they just didn't want it. And that was Mr. Peoples and Mr. Coster and all these people. But if we'd had that, we'd probably be in pretty good shape. But as of right now, I don't think Salida's any bigger than it was when back in the 50s. I think it's still sitting around 5,500 people. And Harvey Guest said, we got so many kids in the school, we need a new middle school. And lo and behold, we got less kids now than we did in the 50s. So there's been some bad mistakes made, and but I want to see the city progress. I ran for the hospital board. I got beat on that because one of my campaign things is I wanted to see a new hospital in Salida. We've got a good hospital, but we need another hospital. This one is an old hospital, and it takes a tremendous amount of money to keep it going. I think if I heard the numbers right, between $500,000 and $600,000 a year just to keep it going. And now they really need some major stuff with electricity and stuff like that. Well, to me, I would like to see them work with the city down there on that Vandeveer property, because we have land down there. I would like to see them get 20 acres of land down there, or whatever they want, work with the city. All the infrastructure's there, the water's there, the sewer runs down there, electric's there, roads are there. It's an ideal situation, and build a new hospital. And when you build a new facility, just like they did the clinic out there, look at the fine doctors that we have that come from the big cities here. We got all the cardiologists, I mean the best. I can speak for for myself, because I see one about every 3 months that comes up here, and Sue has seen them. They just, like I said, we've got excellent doctors right now, and we could attract more. And I was glad to see that, now we're going forward. Even though I'm not on the hospital board, I can still be vocal about it. And I had a hip operation in November, and I got the doctor here to do it, Dr. Messner. I had an aneurysm, and I had two aneurysms, and I had to go to Denver to take care of those. We have vascular doctors here, Dr. Williams and his partner here. And they just said, we don't have the equipment here, or we can do it. And now we're getting good stuff. We've got MRI equipment, We've got all this stuff, you know, and we just need a new hospital. And that's, I'm not saying anymore.
Well, thank you, John. You really
so I hope that it. I hope that's it comes out on your recorder this time.
I'll let you know. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.